Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's FM 103.2, available on the web at fm1032.com.au.
This whole week, we've been looking at the Da Vinci Code and assessing some of its claims. I hope you haven't been bored to tears. In the first couple of nights, we saw 16 historical errors made in the space of just 20 pages, chapters 55 to 58 of the book. The last few nights, I've started to look at the really big claims. Firstly, that Jesus' divinity was simply an invention of the 4th century Emperor Constantine. And secondly, that the Gospels of the New Testament are not the original ones. These are late additions, we're told, which deliberately obscure the teachings of the earlier Gospels. The Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and so on. Last night, we looked at the claim Dan Brown makes about Jesus marrying Mary Magdalene. As I pointed out, he bases his entire argument on one text, the Gospel of Philip, where Jesus is said to have kissed Mary Magdalene. Now, the text says nothing of marriage, and there's certainly no reference to kids. The reference to the kiss is a reference to a religious kiss, not a romantic one at all. And even if the text could be interpreted romantically, the fact that the Gospel of Philip was written in the 2nd or 3rd century means that it has very little claim to record historical tradition. It was composed just too long after the time of Jesus to be considered reliable. But Dan Brown raises a larger question in the minds of many. Are the four Gospels in the New Testament only part of the real picture of the original Jesus? Are there other Gospels the Church doesn't want you to know about, which provide historical information about the Lord? This is the question I want to tackle tonight. But to get us in the mood, let me begin with a juicy quotation from the Da Vinci Code itself. Here, Sir Lee Teabing, one of the main characters in the book, offers up his conspiracy theory about the Gospels. Here it is. Teabing paused to sip his tea and then placed the cup back on the mantel. More than 80 Gospels were considered for the New Testament, and yet only a relative few were chosen for inclusion, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John among them. Who chose which Gospels to include? Sophie asked. Aha! Teabing burst in with enthusiasm. The fundamental irony of Christianity. The Bible as we know it today was collated by the pagan Emperor Constantine the Great. I thought Constantine was a Christian, Sophie said. Hardly, Teabing scoffed. He was a lifelong pagan who was baptized on his deathbed, too weak to protest. The twist is this, Teabing said, talking faster now. Because Constantine upgraded Jesus' status almost 4 centuries after Jesus' death, thousands of documents already existed chronicling his life as a mortal man. To rewrite the history books, Constantine knew he would need a bold stroke. From this sprang the most profound moment in Christian history. Teabing paused, eyeing Sophie. Constantine commissioned and financed a new Bible, which omitted those Gospels that spoke of Christ's human traits and embellished those Gospels that made him godlike. The earlier Gospels were outlawed, gathered up, and burned. Fortunately for historians, Teabing said, some of the Gospels that Constantine attempted to eradicate managed to survive. The Dead Sea Scrolls were found in the 1950s, hidden in a cave near Qumran in the Judean desert. And of course the Coptic Scrolls in 1945 at Nag Hammadi. In addition to telling the true Grail story, that Jesus married Mary Magdalene and had children with her, these documents speak of Christ's ministry in very human terms. Of course the Vatican, in keeping with their tradition of misinformation, tried very hard to suppress the release of these scrolls. And why wouldn't they? The scrolls highlight glaring historical discrepancies and fabrications, clearly confirming that the modern Bible was compiled and edited by men who possessed a political agenda to promote the divinity of the man Jesus Christ and use his influence to solidify their own power base. Wow, that's a bold quote. The reality is, no professional historian in any university in the world would agree that the Dead Sea Scrolls contain anything like a Christian gospel, or, as I said last night, that the Coptic Gospels have anything to say about Jesus marrying Mary Magdalene and having kids with her. These claims are simply ridiculous historically. Minor historical inaccuracies aside, I'm particularly interested tonight in the increasingly popular claim made by Brown's characters that somehow important gospels have been kept out of the public sight. We do have at least 20 additional gospels written in the centuries after Christ. They go by the names of the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of Judas, and plenty of others. None of these Gospels was actually written by the biblical Thomas or Philip or Mary or Judas. These are just names added to the books to lend a bit of credibility. They are what scholars call pseudonymous writings, that is, published under a false name. So how did these other Gospels, Thomas, Philip, etc., come about? If the earliest disciples didn't write them, who wrote them? The reality is, the first century Gospels, now collected in the New Testament, unwittingly spawned a virtual Gospel-writing industry in the 2nd and 3rd centuries. As Christianity spread throughout the Mediterranean world, various splinter groups began to imitate, extend, and sometimes rewrite the older teachings of Jesus. They produced their own Gospels in the names of former biblical greats like Thomas, Philip, Mary, and so on. That way, they could claim that Jesus himself had taught their strange views. Now, one of the reasons the vast majority of ancient Christians rejected these Gospels is that they seem to appear out of nowhere. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John had been known throughout the churches for 50 to 100 years, and then suddenly one Christian group claims to have discovered a book written by Thomas or Judas or whomever. Now, you can understand why the other churches might be suspicious, especially since these new Gospels bore a striking resemblance to the peculiar teachings of the splinter groups that found them. And the teachings of these new Gospels had very little in common with the four earlier Gospels. Are these other Gospels Dan Brown talks about of value to the modern historian? Yes and no. Because these documents reveal something of the views of some 2nd and 3rd century Christian groups, historians study these texts to gain a broader perspective on what we call Christianity. I have the complete collection on my bookshelf for this very reason. But because these books were composed so late, and because their teachings can't be corroborated by any other text, mainstream scholars typically consider these apocryphal gospels inconsequential for the study of the historical Jesus. They were written just too late to be critical to our study of Jesus. I realise it doesn't make for a very good headline, but in the ongoing study of Jesus, the texts at the centre of historical research are still the New Testament Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They are the earliest, most plentiful, and most reliable accounts of Jesus' life available to us. Well, let me close with a brief reflection about the whole Da Vinci Code phenomenon. The mini-scandal caused by this Da Vinci Code book and film illustrates, I think, something very important about the nature of the Christian faith itself. And in this sense, discussion about all these issues is to be welcomed, not to be feared. Christianity has always invited questions and doubts of a historical nature. And there's a very simple reason for that. Christianity, unlike the other major world religions, claims to be based on history. The Hindu Upanishads focus on the believer's merger with the life force Brahman. The Buddhist Tripitaka emphasizes the extinguishment of self and suffering. The Islamic Quran centers on the nature and practice of submission to God. The New Testament, on the other hand, revolves around a series of events said to have occurred in Palestine between 5 BC and AD 30. This makes Christianity particularly open, some would say vulnerable, to historical questions. The logic is very simple. If you claim that something spectacular took place in history, intelligent people are going to ask you historical questions. Questions like, how early are the New Testament reports? How plentiful are the sources behind them? How accurate are they in the incidentals? How credible is their overall portrait of Jesus? Christianity has, on the whole, welcomed this historical questioning. It's as if the Christian faith places its head on the chopping block of public scrutiny and invites anyone who wishes to come and take a swing. And swing they do, because swing they can. And so, if the Da Vinci Code prompts people to scrutinize the historical information about Jesus, it will have done Christianity and the discipline of history a great service indeed. But there's the challenge. Will people scrutinize Christianity? Don't just settle for the nonsense found in what really is just an airport thriller. Please scrutinize the claims of Christ. Look very closely at them. As you do, I'm sure you'll find that the historical Jesus is far more compelling than the Da Vinci Code Jesus.
We hope you enjoyed this FM 103.2 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit fm1032.com.au.